The Asian Classics Institute presents What the Buddha Really Meant with Geshe Michael Roach, recorded live in New York City in November of 1998. This is the beginning of Class 2.
You guys want to experiment with it while I'm making some announcements, that's fine. Okay, we're going to try to find... One of the lights has a bad ballast and it's making noise, but that's okay. Okay, a couple of announcements. Let me see. First of all, I'd like to welcome some people from out of town. Viviana's here from Miami. And she came, I forget where, California.
Yes.
Some of the classes there. And Maya Farrell, who's hiding where? Back there. One of the best students from the Santa Cruz contingent. There's about 100 students out there who studied off and on, and she worked on the CD-ROM and all that. And I think there's some more, but I don't know. Axel and Dito came in from Germany for the class. Other thing, I wanted to thank especially Ellie van der Pas, where'd she go? For, we had a very beautiful audience with His Holiness on Sunday, and Ellie conceived it, pulled it off, got permission, and we presented him with our new CD-ROM and a laptop with all the data on it and with all the courses. And he was very, very happy. And it really, really was a beautiful time. So I'd like to thank all the people that worked on that. If you remember, we're in second class of a thing called Chang'e Lekshen Nyingbo. Say Chang'e. Lekshe Ningbo Chang'e Lekshe Ningbo. This is a text of about 230 pages. It's so important that in the monastery people stop for a year after about 10 or 11 years of study. They memorize the whole thing and then they debate it. You get a special award in the monastery if you memorize it. And this is Jetsun Kapa's explanation basically of the mind-only school. You know, like, how do we know when the Buddha was being literal, and how do we know when the Buddha was speaking figuratively? Like, it's very important when you have a religious figure. In my diamond company, they used to call it the prophet, you know, and my boss would make a statement and he'd be kidding. Like, everybody can take Friday off, you know. And then some people would take him literally and take off Friday, and then they would quote him and say, "You said we could all have Friday off." And he said, "I was just kidding, you know. You don't know when I'm kidding and when I'm not kidding." And it's the same problem with any religious leader. You know, it can be very, very dangerous. Like, His Holiness gets quoted all the time, right? His Holiness makes some offhand comment, and then somebody says, oh, Dalai Lama said so, you know, and then you have to say, no, he said that, but he didn't mean that, and then you have to interpret it. So this is the very, very delicate question of when do you know when a religious leader was speaking figuratively and when were they speaking literally, because if you get it wrong, you make huge mistakes, you know, then you end up with, you know, religious divisions that kill thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, things like that, you know. You have to know when is it when the leader was speaking figuratively and when were they speaking literally, okay? And different schools of Buddhism have different interpretations of when the Buddha was speaking figuratively and when he wasn't, okay? So we're in the middle of studying two of them. One is the mind-only school's interpretation, what they say was figurative and what they say was literal. And then after that we get the Madhyamika school, the middle way school, what they say was figurative and what they say was literal. So it's a very beautiful excuse to figure out what does the mind-only school believe, okay? Is the mind-only school correct? Not according to the middle way school, okay? Who's in the middle way school? Lord Buddha, Dalai Lama, Jatsangkhapa, Nagarjuna, okay? You know, Ken Rinpoche. I mean, this is the school that we are holding, and all the tantric schools. You see what I mean? We are middle way school. Okay, so they say that the middle way school is wrong. Well, does that mean we shouldn't study the middle way school? Not at all. Okay, middle way school was designed by Lord Buddha to fit certain people who weren't ready for middle way school. I mean, mind only school was designed by Lord Buddha for people who weren't ready for middle way school yet. Okay, and it's a very, very cool version of Buddhism, and you better know it, you better study it, because it means the reason it exists is that normal thinking people like you or me might come up with some ideas that follow the mind-only school and are incorrect according to the ultimate interpretation. Okay, so we have to learn what's almost correct so that we can weed out of our own mind our own wrong ideas about emptiness mainly. So it's very, very cool to study the mind-only school, because you get some very subtle, very beautiful, and a little bit wrong ideas about emptiness. And then they help you clarify your own thinking about emptiness. If you're very sensitive to this class, you'll find out that a lot of the ideas you have about emptiness are mind-only school's ideas about emptiness and are wrong. And by studying the mind-only school, you can purify your thinking about emptiness. You see what I mean? Mind-only school is very, very close to correct. And that makes it very interesting to study. Okay, and that's why we're going to be concentrating on it. Okay, where are we? If you remember, the mind-only school says, when you want to know whether what the Buddha said was literal or figurative, you have to go to a certain sutra called what? Do you guys remember? It's called, in Tibetan, Dode Gongdo. What's it mean? You can call it the sutra in which the Buddha explains all his other sutras. Okay? Okay, Dode Gongdo means literally the sutra in which Lord Buddha said, oh, by the way, here's what I meant in all my other sutras, okay? It's even called the commentary on the intent, on the true intent of the other sutras, okay? Because it was called commentary for many years, I thought it was by some Indian commentator. It's not. It's the Buddha's own commentary. It's like an auto-commentary on his own sutras. It's like the Buddha explaining, this is what I meant in the sutras. Okay, what sutras are we talking about? Don't forget we got here from the two turnings of the wheel. In general, there are three turnings of the wheel, right? There are three great cycles of teaching in the Buddha's career. And people, you know, tend to say they happened in order, you know, that first he taught what we call the turning of the wheel about the four noble truths or the four Arya truths. After that, he gave the turning of the wheel on emptiness. For example, the Heart Sutra at Vulture's Peak. And then later on in his life, he gave the what we call the turning of the wheel on the fine distinctions, where he explained what he meant in the other two turnings of the wheel, okay? But in the debates in the monastery, we thrash out that these are not necessarily historical periods, okay? It's not as if he never taught the Four Noble Truths later on in his life. It's not as though he never spoke about emptiness in the first period of his teaching. So when we talk about turning of the wheel, we're talking about those cycles which incorporate those teachings that concentrate on those subjects, okay? So maybe there's a first turning of the wheel the first time he ever opened his mouth after getting enlightened. And then maybe there's a first turning of the wheel 30 years later, and then there's some more first turning of the wheel 50 years later, or something like that, okay? And so you have to think of the three turnings of the wheel like that, right? Now, don't forget where we are. Some bodhisattva named, I don't know, Dandamyandapat, okay? Paramartha Samudgata, has come up to the Buddha in the 10th chapter of that sutra called the sutra where I explain what I meant in all my other sutras, okay? And he says, Lord Buddha, you know, we really appreciate it. Back in the first turning of the wheel, you taught us the four Arya truths. That was really beautiful. You taught us about the five heaps. You taught us about the 12 doors of sense. You taught us about the six elements. You taught us about the 18 categories. You taught us about the 37 parts of enlightenment, including the Eightfold Arya Path. You know, all these other beautiful teachings you gave us. We really appreciate it. Then when you got to the second turning of the wheel, you basically said five things. You said, A, nothing has any nature of its own. Nothing starts. Nothing stops. Everything is in a state of peace. Everything is in a state of nirvana. Okay? Then you said that. That was the second turning of the wheel. And then, what is this third turning of the wheel? When does the third turning of the wheel start, basically? It's when the bodhisattva asks the question, okay? This is the third turning of the wheel, okay? If you want to know where it starts, it's where this bodhisattva says, hey, Buddha, you know, first you said all these things existed. When you gave that whole thing about the four Arya truths, everything else, you said everything exists by nature. You never said anything about nothing existing by nature. You said maybe things don't have a cell sometimes, you said that, but you didn't say existing by, they didn't exist by nature. Then when you got to the second turning of the wheel, you're up on Vulture's Peak, you're saying the Heart Sutra, for example, your eyes don't exist, your ears don't exist, your nose doesn't exist, your mouth doesn't exist, your mind doesn't exist, and you go from like a list like that. It seems to contradict, okay? You seem to contradict yourself. First you said all these great teachings about the four, oh, everything is suffering, there's a cause, you can find a way out, this is how you get out, you know, like that. These inspiring teachings. Then you get to the second turning of the wheel, and you just get up and you like these, do this radical thing of saying, nothing exists. Nothing has any nature of its own, okay? So what are we supposed to believe? You know, what did you seem to contradict yourself? What are we supposed to believe when you said those things, okay? So now we get to the third turning of the wheel. And the third turning of the wheel is this bodhisattva, is triggered by this bodhisattva asking Lord Buddha, did you mean what you said in the first one? Or did you mean what you said in the second one? Or what did you mean? Okay. Specifically he asks, what did you mean when you said nothing has any nature of its own? Okay. He doesn't so much ask, oh, back in the first turning of the wheel you said everything did have a nature of its own. He's more asking about the second turning of the wheel. Wouldn't you ask? I mean, didn't you, the first time you hear the Heart Sutra, didn't you ask? You know, what does he mean when he gets up and says, there's no pen here? Okay. What does Lord Buddha mean when he gets up and says, there's no pen here? Okay. There is no pen here. Okay. Then, by asking that, by implication you're asking, in the first turning of the wheel, what did you mean when you said there was a pen there? Okay. But the bodhisattva's question is very specifically about the second turning of the wheel. And wouldn't your question be the same? You know, why did you get up and say that this thing didn't even exist? You know, what's the point? What are you trying to prove? And were you speaking literally or not? Are we to understand that nothing exists at all? Is that what you meant? Okay, so that's the question, which triggers the third turning of the wheel, right? The third turning of the wheel is called the turning of the wheel of fine distinctions, meaning subtle distinctions. The Buddha is going to start to make distinctions. Okay? In the third turning of the wheel, he says, oh, Bodhisattva Dandayanapat, I didn't, no, I wouldn't say nothing exists. Would I say that? Of course I wouldn't say that, you know. That's too radical. Don't forget Lord Buddha says basically five very radical things during the second turning of the wheel. Nothing has any nature of its own. Nothing begins. Nothing stops. Everything is in a state of total peace. From the beginning, everything is in a state of nirvana. He says those five things, okay? We're going to concentrate on the first one in this class, and then we'll concentrate on the other four in the next class, okay? So right now we're just asking, Buddha is answering Dandayanapaka Bodhisattva when he says, what did you mean when you said the pen is lo ni me? Say lo ni me. Lo ni me. Lo ni means a nature of its own. Lo ni means nature of its own. Me means it doesn't have any. Okay? It doesn't have any. Try to get the same feeling that the bodhisattva is getting, okay? Lord Buddha is standing up there during the second turning of the wheel. Lord Buddha is holding up this pen and saying, this pen does not have any nature of its own. What does that mean to you when I say that? This pen doesn't have any nature of its own. What's it mean to you? What kind of feeling do you get when I say that? Yeah, he's saying we imagine it or we create it in our minds. Okay, but I mean, if it didn't have any nature of its own, then couldn't I hold this up and it would look the same? You see what I mean? If this didn't have any penness of its own, and this didn't have any paperness of its own, then couldn't I just hold them up and they would look the same? I mean, isn't it confusing to say, it doesn't have any nature of being a pen? It doesn't have any nature of being paper. I mean, isn't that confusing? You know, doesn't that seem to be wrong? You know, of course it has a nature of being a pen. You know, I write with it, it's just right. And this one, of course it has a nature of being paper. Okay? What does it mean when you say it doesn't have any nature of being a pen? Okay? What does it mean when you say it doesn't have any nature of being a pen? Huh? She says it's your projection. Okay? Meaning, it doesn't have any nature of being a pen from its own side. How's that? Okay? It doesn't have any nature of being a pen from its own side. That's what Majjhimika would say, okay? Forget Majjhimika. Forget everything you ever learned in this class. You are now mind-only school. When Geshe Thich Nhat taught us this in the monastery, he said, there is the door to Majjhimika, and shut it, and stop going over there, okay? You are now mind-only school, and I want you to think like mind-only school. And for the next 6 weeks, you will be mind-only school. So forget this projection stuff, okay? Forget it. Forget everything you ever heard about emptiness. You're going to learn emptiness the wrong way now, okay? You're going to learn it the mind-only way school. And it's mind-only school way. And it's very cool because by learning it very well, by the end of this class, you'll be very well confused. You know, you'll be thinking, you know, you'll be thinking you're a mind-only school. You'll be thinking of emptiness like a mind-only school person. And then at the very last class, we'll tell you you're wrong again. And you get to go back to middle-way school, okay? And what happens is it clarifies your whole thinking about emptiness. Then you can explain to somebody. Somebody comes up with some weird idea about emptiness. You say, oh, you got that mind-only school problem. I used to have that. Yeah, this is how you fix it, you know? And then your thinking about emptiness becomes very, very clear, okay? So, don't forget what hat we have on. We are in the sutra in which the Buddha explains the intent of his other sutras. This is the sutra that the mind-only school loves to pull out and say, here's what Lord Buddha really meant. Okay, especially the 10th chapter. What's the 10th chapter? The chapter requested by that bodhisattva. Okay, the chapter where that bodhisattva says, what did you mean when you said nothing had any nature its own? Then Lord Buddha gives a mind-only school answer. Okay? He doesn't say, oh, I meant everything is a projection. He doesn't say, I meant nothing comes from its own side. What he says is, oh, you're right, you know, I was speaking figuratively. Okay? Of course not everything is so radical as that. You know? If you said this pen had no nature at all of its own, you'd be saying it didn't exist. You can see it works. You can see it's, it works. I wouldn't say that. That isn't what I meant. Okay? He's already giving a mind-only school answer. Why? Because that's all they can handle. That's all that the people there can handle. Okay? So why does he teach something that's wrong? To get them to move up higher. Okay? It keeps them engaged. Okay? Keeps them in the room. Okay? And then he teaches them more and more and more, and then finally he pushes them up higher and higher. Okay? But it's very necessary. Okay? There's some big implications here. One is that when you teach your own students, or when you explain Buddhism to other people, you might find it necessary to make simplifications. And some of them might even be technically wrong. And that's fine, if it keeps them engaged and you can bring them up higher. Secondly, it means that you don't know that any spiritual teacher you ever meet of any tradition might not be speaking figuratively on purpose to attract those students. So that means, the implication there is that we have to be extremely careful about judging other traditions and judging other spiritual teachers. You can say that's technically incorrect, but can you say that's of no benefit, or that doesn't lead people further on, or maybe this person is just speaking figuratively because he has certain students who need to hear it that way. You have to be very careful. What's the first bodhisattva vow? Yeah, do not speak highly of yourself and criticize others, meaning in that vow, other religious traditions, other religious teachers, to criticize them, to judge them as if you could read their mind, and you can't. You see what I mean? You can say that message is incorrect for this reason and this reason and this reason, but is it of no benefit? And can you judge that person's mind and their heart and why they're teaching it that way? You cannot. Don't judge the person. Absolutely, you must judge the system. You have to say, that system's not correct for the following reasons. If it's appropriate to say that, if it's good for people to say that, it might not be good all the time. And His Holiness, if you watch His Holiness teach, every time He gets to a different group, He's got a little bit different angle, and that's what you're supposed to do. Okay? That's what enlightened beings do. Okay? Yeah. Did you have a question?
Yeah. This would be true also for other religions.
Of course. Yeah. Where do you draw the line between Buddhism and non-Buddhism as far as saying this is not beneficial for people? You see what I mean? That's what I'm trying to say. If you get good at understanding what we're going to cover in this class, logically, you have to be very careful about judging other traditions of all kinds. Okay? It does not mean that when the time comes, you don't blow them away with correct view. You do. But only when it's appropriate and only when it's useful and beneficial for the people who are there. Okay? All right. So Lo Nyi Me means, Lord Buddha said in the second turning of the wheel, nothing has any nature of its own. Did you mean that, Lord Buddha? And then he says, oh, Bodhisattva, no, I didn't mean that. You know, I'm not that radical. Come on, you know me better than that. I wouldn't say nothing exists. I wouldn't say nothing had any nature of its own. I had three different things in mind when I said that. Okay? Here they are. And this is the whole foundation of the mind-only school. If you understand what I'm about to say for the next hour, you understand about 50% of the mind-only school. So here's the first thing I had in mind when I said that, O Bodhisattva. Say, Tenyi.
Tenyi.
Lo.
Lo.
Nyi.
Nyi.
Me.
Me.
Tenyi.
Tenyi.
Lo.
Lo.
Nyi.
Nyi.
Me.
Me.
So you see the Lo Nyi Me part is the same, right? Doesn't have any nature of its own. And now we just need Tenyi. Tenyi means definitive. Definitive. Now when we say definitive in Tibetan, it's a very, very, very greasy word, okay? If I say, think of it this way. Fire is hot by definition. Okay? Fire is hot by definition. The flu is no fun, by definition. Okay? I had it the other day. Okay? You know, steel is hard, by definition. Okay? By definition means what, in that case? Does it mean, like, if you look it up in Webster's, that's its definition? Not, no. Okay? By the way, there's a great Chinese commentary on the original sutra. Jetsun Kapa will continually be referring to it. It's by a great scholar named Wen Sik. Okay? And he constantly is bringing up the Chinese commentary. This is a huge ancient Chinese commentary on this sutra. And in that sutra, the Chinese commentator, who turns out to be a Korean or something, I don't remember, but he's writing in Chinese, and he says, definition here means like definition in a dictionary. And Jetsun Kapa says, no, come on, that's not what it means. Okay? It's, by definition doesn't mean by the definition in the dictionary. It just means by the very nature of that thing. Okay? Like fire is hot by definition. Okay, fire means something that's hot. Okay, by definition. Okay. A pen, by definition, writes, or something like that. Okay, by definition. Meaning, from its own side, in its own way, through its own nature. Okay? Here we're trying to point to a group of things where the Buddha can say, those things don't have any existence by definition. Okay? Can you imagine something that doesn't have any existence by definition? Okay? And what the Lord Buddha says, we'll take kuntak. Okay, say kunta. Okay, I'll spell it for you. Very famous in the mind-only school. Say kunta.
Kunta.
Kunta. Kuntak is a very, very, very difficult word in Buddhism. It has many, many different meanings. But what it means here is like imagined or imaginary or a construct of the mind. Okay? A construct of the mind. I'll give you an example. Okay? Is it possible that there could be a flower which would grow in mid-air between us, right here where my hand is. Is it possible that a real flower could start to sprout and grow without any earth, without any water, without any seed? It could just sit there and grow like that. Okay. Normal circumstances, okay? Not LSD, all right? Is it possible? Generally not, okay? Generally not. I mean, you might see it or imagine it or something like that. But the point is that it's generally speaking, that's what they call a sky flower or something. It's a mistranslation. It's a flower which would grow in midair without any seed, without any water, without any earth, without any oxygen, just nothing. Just whoop, there's a flower there, okay? Does such a thing exist? Can you imagine it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay? That's a kuntak. That's a mental construct, okay? There's two flavors of kuntaks, okay? There's two flavors of mental constructs. One flavor doesn't exist. One version doesn't exist, okay? A flower that could grow in midair is an example of one that doesn't exist. Now I'll give you the classical... The imagination exists, but a real flower that corresponds to that imagination doesn't exist, okay? The construct is the imagination. That exists, but there is no corresponding reality to it, okay? You can imagine it, and the imagination exists, but there's no corresponding real flower, okay? You can imagine a rabbit with horns on its head, right? But there's no corresponding real thing. You see what I mean? So we call it a kuntak of the flavor that doesn't exist, okay? Now I'll give you a kuntak of a flavor that does exist. And this is a beautiful example of a construct in Tibetan Buddhism. Very, very famous example, okay? This was given to us over and over and over again by the High Lama who taught us this subject to a group of us when we were there last month. Okay, he says, okay, so some family is blessed with a child, you know, and the mommy is pregnant and there's a child, she gets bigger and bigger, and mommy and daddy are waiting expectantly, and suddenly one day a boy comes out, okay, and a boy child is born, okay. And then about a day later, the parents consult, and they decide to call the boy Dashi. Okay? Say Dashi.
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 Very typical Tibetan name. It means good luck or something like that. Like Dashi Dele means, you know, have a good day or something like that. So there's this they decide to call the boy Dashi. And then after the second day, when the parents see this child, they think the boy named Dashi. Okay? They think they have a mental image of this thing called Dashi. Okay? From that moment on, in their minds, they think of him as Tashi. Okay? So there's a difference between the blob that came out on the first day, that little, you know, thing, you know. It's just a boy child. It's just a child. Okay? At that point, it's just a physical, color, shapes, crying, you know, child. And then after the second day, they're starting to think of it as Tashi. Okay? So think of the child as out there, some kind of, you know, ball of flesh, okay? And then there's the parents sitting back here looking at it, and they are thinking of the child as Tashi. And in between their mind and this child is this construct, right? This mental image called the boy named Tashi. Okay? So you got three different things here. You got that blob of flesh out there crying. You got the parents back here looking at it. And they are naming it or thinking of it, right? By the way, when they talk about constructs, they talk about constructs in two senses, naming and thinking, okay? It's one thing to give it the name Tashi. It's another thing to think of him as Tashi, okay? So really you have a construct which is created by by names and thoughts. You have to think of that, okay? Names and thoughts. Constructs are created by names and thoughts. Name meaning verbalization, let's call him Tashi. Thought meaning thinking of him as Tashi, okay? So you got three things here, right? You got the kid out here, which existed from the first day. You got the boy named Tashi here, which is a concept or a construct which existed from the second day. And then you have the parents back here who are naming the boy or thinking of the boy in a certain way. Okay? So that idea, Tashi, that concept, Tashi, or construct called the boy named Tashi, is something that is a kuntak. And it's a kuntak which exists. There is a boy that corresponds to that idea. Okay? There is this thing out there that corresponds to the idea, the boy named Dashi. Okay. Our teacher in the monastery went over this over and over and over. I'm Deshi. This is Deshi. This is a boy named Deshi, you know, over and over again. Then we had a one-day break in the middle of these incredible classes. We went to the Tantric College, and the abbot gave us lunch, and we had a long, beautiful talk. And then the monastery treasurer came up, and he stood up, and he said, I want to introduce myself, and I want to talk to you all about a special project we're working on, we hope you'll support. And my name is Deshi. And everybody started roaring, you know. He was like, oh, man. He didn't know what was going on, you know. It's really funny. Like 20 foreigners are laughing at him, and he doesn't know why. Yeah, so we met Deshi, okay? So now you know there's two kinds of constructs, okay? Two kinds of constructs. Two kinds of... One of them doesn't... Like, you can imagine a flower that goes in midair, but it doesn't exist, okay? The other is thinking of somebody in a certain way, and you have, like, this mental construct. We're already getting very close to emptiness, aren't we? There's obviously a reason why Lord Buddha is bringing up these three different kinds of no-self nature, okay? He doesn't answer the Bodhisattva and says, oh, everything's a projection. That's what I meant when I said nothing had any nature of its own. He says, oh, yeah, you know, I didn't mean it literally. Don't take it literally. There's three kinds. There's three ways in which things don't exist or don't have their own self nature. One is all of those things in the world that don't have any definitive nature of their own. Oh, what are those, says the Bodhisattva. And Lord Buddha says, constructs. Things that you make up in your mind. That was the answer that Ken gave when we first started the class. I said, what does it mean not to exist by definition? And he came up with it on his own. He said, oh, things that you imagine. Things that are just made up in your mind. And that's exactly the first kind of no-self nature. So Lord Buddha says, oh, the first thing I was talking about when I said nothing had any nature of its own was things that don't have any definitive nature. And that's all those things that you just imagine. Whether they exist or not. Whether they refer to things that exist or not, it's all the things that you imagine, okay? And that's called kuntak, okay? In the mind-only school, if you understand what we call the three attributes of the mind-only school, then you understand the mind-only school. This is the first one. Somebody says, what are you studying in Michael Roach's class? You say, we're studying mind-only. So give me the three attributes. What are the three attributes? Oh, first one is kuntak. Okay? And they say, oh, they're already on to kuntaks. Wow, you know. Okay? Now you have to know the other two or else you get embarrassed, okay? Then Lord Buddha says, oh, when I said nothing had any nature of its own, here's the second thing I meant. Say, kewa, ngowo, ni, mepa. Kewa, ngowo, ni, mepa. Okay. Kewa means for something to grow, okay? Kewa means to grow. Ngo ni mepa, you know, it means what? Has no nature of its own. Okay? Has no nature of its own. Okay? And what Lord Buddha is saying, the second thing I meant, during the second turn of the wheel, when I got up and said, nothing has any nature of its own, I meant there are certain things in the world that don't grow through any nature of their own. They don't have any nature of their own in the sense that they don't grow through any nature of their own. What does that mean? Very, very simple. There are things in the world which grow through their causes and their conditions. That's all. Okay? There are things in the world which don't grow through not having causes and conditions. Okay? Can anything grow without its causes and conditions? No. Okay? Impossible. So all Lord Buddha says, look, when I said things don't have their nature, what I meant about stuff that grows is that it doesn't grow without its causes and conditions. It doesn't have any nature of growing without its causes and conditions. Said positively, what? All those things which grow do have a nature of growing through their causes and conditions. Said negatively, nothing has any nature of growing that grows without growing from its causes and conditions. Okay? So what is he talking about here? Things that grow. What's he trying to say when he says they have no nature? He's saying they don't have any nature of growing by themselves. Okay? They depend on other stuff. We're getting very close to what? Friday night people. Dependent origination, the wheel of life, the 12 links. Okay? All he's saying is that look, there's certain stuff in the world that grows. And it doesn't have a nature of growing by itself. Okay? It does have a nature of growing from other things. So in each case, we're going to get a positive and a negative, right? In this case, what's the positive? Things do have a nature of growing from other things. Things don't have a nature of growing from themselves. What's the most important example of this? Your suffering, your bad days, your old age, your sickness, everything about your life that you don't like, okay? Everything like that. Dukden. Say Dukden.
Dukden.
The Arya truth of suffering, which is what? Which is your whole life. Okay? The Arya truth of suffering. Everything about your life. The fact that A, half the stuff that happens to you is bad. The fact that B, the good stuff always changes and goes away. Gets worse. Okay? That's it. That summarizes your life. That's Dukden. Truth of the source of suffering. Okay? Does it have... Why is Buddha saying it doesn't have a nature? What is he trying to tell you? In the second turn of the wheel, he's talking about your suffering. Everything bad that happened to you all day today. And he's saying it doesn't have a nature. What does he mean? He's not saying it's not there.
It doesn't. Huh? It's not by itself.
Yeah, he's just saying it doesn't happen from nothing, man. You got to figure out where it's coming from. That's all. In a negative way, your suffering does not come from nothing. You have to figure out why this is happening to you. You know, you have to figure out why you're getting old and you have to stop it. Okay? You have to figure out why things happen to you all day that you don't like and you have to stop it. Okay? Said in a positive way, everything has a cause. Everything bad that's happening to you has a real cause. Okay. Said in a negative way, nothing bad that's happened to you comes from itself. There's a hidden cause. If you could figure it out, you could get out of all this stuff. You don't have to get old, and you don't have to die, and you don't have to live in a world like this. This world is a boo-boo. This world is the desire. The desire realm is a mistake. People get here by making a mistake. Okay? Correct the mistake, you're out of here. Really, we're all in the same boat. It's very funny. We're at a slice of the reality pie where you must suffer. And you can get out of it. You can move out of that level. You can go to a different level where they don't suffer. We're just here by accident. We're here because we didn't learn. What? Dependent origination. Okay. So Lord Buddha says, you weren't here on Friday night. Okay. Anyway, so Lord Buddha is basically saying, look, you know, don't think what I said when I said nothing has a nature, when I was talking about caused things, things that have causes, and specifically about your bad time in your life, all I meant was it doesn't happen from nothing. It happens from something. And if you figure it out, you don't have to keep like that. Okay? That's all. That's what I said. That's what I meant when I said nothing starts. Nothing has any nature of starting. Nothing has any nature of beginning. That's all I meant. Okay? Would I say it's all a projection? No. You know. Okay? All right? It's interesting. I'll ask you a cool question. Third turning of the wheel is literal or figurative according to the mind-only school. When the Buddha is saying all this stuff, oh, I didn't mean it's all projection. I didn't mean that. Is he being literal or figurative?
Literal.
Literal. Oh, yeah, in the mind-only school. Okay. To the mind-only school, he's being literal when he says, I didn't mean that when I said everything was a projection. Okay. They take him to be literal. Now, switch over to the middle way hat. Okay, take off the mind-only hat, put on the middle way hat. What do they say about the third turn of the wheel?
Figurative.
Buddha was being figurative. When he said, I didn't mean all that stuff about projections. Of course things have a nature. I wouldn't say nothing has a nature. Okay? Second turn of the wheel, mind-only school. Literal or figurative?
Figurative.
Figurative. Okay? The Buddha didn't mean it when he said nothing has any nature of its own. According to the mind-only school. Okay? In the second turn of the wheel, when Lord Buddha said, this pen doesn't have any nature of its own, he was being
figurative.
Okay? According to the middle way school?
Literal.
Okay? What about the first turn of the wheel? Oh, the five heaps, four Arya truths, they all exist by definition.
For who?
Good question. Mind only school?
Literal.
Literal. Okay? Middle way school?
Figurative.
He didn't mean it. Okay? He was just trying to help out those poor, you know, five guys that he first met. All right? You got to get used to that. It's very cool. You got to slide between the different schools. All right? Okay, so the things in the world which don't have a nature of growing all on their own, stated negatively. The things in the world which do have a nature of growing from their causes and conditions, stated positively, right, are called shenwang. Say shenwang.
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 Very, very famous, okay? People say, what are you studying? Mind only school. Hey, what are the three attributes? Gunda, shenwang. Okay, you gotta have it like boom, 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 you know? Shen means other, something other. Wang means power. Shenwang means things that grow are not, what do you call it, independent. They depend on other things. See, they are at the mercy of other things. How's that? Shenwang means at the mercy of other things. What? If you have ignorance, you will get old and die. How's that? Okay? Your death and your aging are at the mercy of your ignorance. As long as the ignorance is there, it's pushing them around. It's calling the shots. As soon as you remove the ignorance, you do not have to get old and die. Okay? Period. Okay? So aging itself, the fact that you are getting older year by year, is shenwang. It's at the mercy of other factors. It's occurring at the mercy of other factors. What? Link number one in the wheel of life. Ignorance. Okay? Aging and death are link number 12. And they come from link number one. Link number one triggers a process which creates link number 12. If you could shut off the wheel of life, the faucet, at link number one, you don't have to get old and die in this lifetime. You don't have to. Okay? That's the whole point. Okay? So shenwang means those things which are at the mercy of other things, meaning anything which has its own causes and conditions. Okay? Anything which has its own causes and conditions. Meaning all changing things. Meaning 99% of your world. Okay? 99% of your world. There's very few things in your experience which are not changing. Almost nothing. Okay? What's an example of one? Well, how about the imagination of a sky flower? You see what I mean? Does it change? I mean, the perfect idealization of an object. We call it unchanging. Okay? We say it's unchanging. Okay? And the idealization called Tashi, the boy named Tashi. Tashi. The idea Tashi is what we call unchanging. The concept Tashi is unchanging. Okay? The mental image, he is Tashi, is a fact. Facts don't change. It's either true or false, but it doesn't change once it's true. You see what I mean? Is it true that the sky is blue? Yes. Is it more or less true as the days go by? No. Okay? Is it true that all things have emptiness? Yes. Could that be 50% true?
No.
No. Okay? It's a concept, construct. Okay? They don't change. But shenwangs are different. Shenwangs change all the time. What's a shenwang? Your pen, your arm, your nose, your eye, your world, your city, your school, your paper, okay? Your life, everything around you, everything, your mind, okay, is changing. Okay, that's called shenwang. Okay? Does it have a nature of its own? You should ask me whose school.
Yeah,
the school. Let's say mind only school. Does it have a nature of its own?
Yes.
Does your nose have a nature of its own? Huh?
Yes.
I just got through saying it didn't.
No.
No, it does not have a nature of its own. What kind of nature of its own doesn't it have? It doesn't have a nature of growing without any kind of causes. Okay? It doesn't have a nature of coming from nothing. Okay? That's all. That's all. That's it. Kewa loa ni mepa. Okay? Oh, Lord Buddha says, oh yeah, I did say about your nose that it doesn't have any nature of its own. I didn't mean it was a projection or anything wild like that. All I meant was that it comes from its own causes. It does not have a nature of not coming from any causes. Okay? If you like your nose or you don't like your nose, there's a reason for that. There's a certain karma that's causing that. That's all. That's all I meant. I meant it doesn't happen by accident. It doesn't happen out of the blue from nothing. There's a reason for your nose. There's an exact reason for every detail of your nose. And everything is depending from some past karma that you did. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, she said, what's the kundak of your nose? Okay, what's the mental construct of your nose? Yeah, it's thinking about your nose as your nose. And that doesn't change. Okay? The fact that your nose is a nose, how's that? It doesn't change. The idealization of nose. Nose. Remember, we were in California, we did car. Now we're doing nose. Okay? Okay? So you see, this is, by the way, one reason why in the mind-only school they're called the three attributes. Meaning, you can tie them into almost every object, you see? There's a Shenwangness about your nose, which is the fact that it's a changing, growing thing. And there's a Kuntakness about your nose, which is that when you perceive your nose, you're actually relying very heavily on a mental picture or ways of thinking about your nose. In the mind-only school, ultimately you are not even perceiving your nose. You are perceiving some kind of mental picture. Okay? Very subtle. But you can establish all three natures with almost any object. And we'll get to that. Okay? Your nose has a Shenwangness about it, and your nose has a Kuntakness about it. Okay? Your nose is an example of Shenwang, meaning a changing thing, or a dependent thing. I'll call it dependent thing, okay? And your nose has a conceptual thing about it, which is, you know, basically when you perceive your nose, it's that you're thinking about it as your nose. Okay? And you're actually mostly perceiving your idea of your nose rather than your nose. Okay? Yeah? He's saying, well, if you talk about Kuntaks as names, can't names change? For example, first he was Blob, then he was Tushy, right? Okay? I mean, that seems to be changing, right? Think of it more as the fact that he is called what he is called, rather than what he is called. Okay? See, facts are unchanging. Okay? The fact that it's a certain temperature in this room is constant. Okay? The fact that this pen doesn't have its own nature is constant. It's never 100, it's never 50% empty, or 65% empty, or more empty 5 minutes from now and less empty 10 minutes from now. It is a constant. Facts are constant. Truths are constant. Okay? Is this planet round? I mean, according to our present knowledge? Yes. Does the fact that the planet is round ever change? I mean, not in our normal everyday perception. Okay. Can the planet itself be destroyed? Yes. After that, can we say that the fact that the planet is round has changed? No. It has gone out of existence. And there's a big difference. The planet did not become less round. The planet just went away. Okay. Is this pen empty? Yes. Does this pen have emptiness? Yes. Does it have any more emptiness today than it has tomorrow? No. Emptiness just means it's not a projection. Okay? It's not like 50% empty today and 100%. Truths are unwavering. Truths either are true 100% or not. They're either on or off. That's all. And that's what, in Kuntak, the fact that the boy is named Tashi is the Kuntak. You got it? It's very subtle. And that doesn't change. The boy can die. But he's not less called Tashi before he died and after he died. See what I mean? Tashi is gone. You can't say about the boy that he's called Tashi. But it's not like Tashi's not Tashi. Okay. Yeah, you can say that. You can say that.
So what's changed and what hasn't
You wouldn't say that the Kuntak has changed. Okay? He is the thing we used to call Tashi. Is not changing. You see? He is the thing we call Ronald Reagan. Is a fact. You see what I mean? Is a fact. Is an unchanging fact. Okay? It can go out of existence or into existence. But it changing, don't forget, changing doesn't mean necessarily destroyed. Changing means more or less. You know, wavering like that. It's very subtle. Okay? It's very subtle. The fact that this is empty never changes. But the emptiness of the pen can go out of existence. But when it goes out of existence, it's either existing or not existing. When it's existing, the pen is 100% empty. Okay. It's never more or less true that it's empty. It's always 100% true that it's empty. You got to get used to that. Okay. Did you have a question?
The last question is about approximation or fuzzy notion.
Yeah.
She
said, what about a thing called yichur? We talked last class about approximate understandings of things. Those are wushenwangs. All mental things are changing things. All mental things are dependent things. All mental things depend on their causes and conditions. They are all lumped into the category of shenwangs, changing things, dependent things. Okay? Yeah. It's a mental image. It's not made of mental stuff. It's like that. It's a concept. It's a fact. And not mental stuff in Buddhism means, does it perceive? You see? Does it perceive? You see? Is it consciousness itself? Okay? That's the test. Is this mental stuff? No, because it can't perceive anything. See, I mean, don't get confused about objects of the mind and the mind itself. The mind is a perceiving thing. Mental stuff is perceiving stuff. Stuff which has the quality of perceiving. Okay? And constructs are not perceiving. They are perceived by the mind. Okay? Big difference. When I say mental stuff, I mean made of the stuff of consciousness. Meaning, sashing vikpa. Knowing. Conscious. Aware. Okay? The mental constructs themselves are not thinking things. They are things in your mind. Okay? Okay, last one. It's nice to be in another school because you can always say, oh, this school doesn't make sense. So. When you get into a hard question. By the way, this is probably the most difficult class. I mean, this is where you're getting the structure of the mind-only school. Okay? And then from here on it'll be easier. This is where you get the main clash with everything you've learned before. Okay? Say dundam. I'm sorry, dundampa. Lo. Ni. Mepa. And by the way, we will go over these three qualities again and again and again and again. Okay, so don't get nervous. Okay, if you didn't get it the first time, we'll be going it over and again. This is just the introduction. When the teacher got to this in the monastery, everyone was like, you know, and then he said, okay, go home, think about it, come back tomorrow. Okay, say dundampa. Lo. Ni. Mepa. Okay, and then Lord Buddha says to the Bodhisattva, okay, here's the third thing I meant. Sorry, I keep stepping on your toe. Here's the third thing I meant when I said nothing has any nature of its own. Okay? Here's the third thing I meant. What was the first thing he meant? Oh, some things don't have any nature of existing by definition. What? Oh, things that you imagine. Okay? So that's what I was talking about. The first time, you know, the first thing I was talking about when I said nothing had any nature was there's certain stuff like imaginary things that don't have any definitive nature of their own. That's what I meant. That's the first thing I meant. Oh, and then there's other things that grow, you know, and die, flower and die. Oh, those things don't have any nature of growing on their own. Okay, that's the second thing I meant. Now here's the third thing I meant. Say, dundampa.
Dundampa.
Lo.
Ni.
Mepa. Dundampa means ultimate. Okay? Ultimate. Dundampa means ultimate. Lo ni mepa is the same. Say lo ni
mepa.
Lo ni
mepa.
Okay. Dundampa means ultimate. Okay? Dundampa means ultimate. So some things I was talking about don't have a nature of being ultimate. And that's the third thing I meant when I was talking about it. Okay? Some things don't have a nature of being ultimate. And that's the third thing I meant when I said nothing has any nature of its own. Okay? Those are the three different things I meant when I said nothing has any nature of its own. Okay? What does it mean not to be ultimate? We can talk about it in two different ways. Are kuntaks ultimate? Are kuntaks ultimate?
No.
Is that imaginary flower ultimate? No, it doesn't have any existence by definition. It doesn't have any real existence, okay? Right? How about dashi? The idea of dashi. No, it's an imaginary thing, okay? It doesn't have its own self-standing existence, okay? If the dad wasn't there and the mom wasn't there to think of him as dashi, you think there'd be a dashi?
No.
Not as a dashi, okay? Would there be a blob of flesh crying? Yes. Okay? Would there be a dashi? No. Why? Nobody thought of him as dashi yet, and no one called him dashi yet, okay? So in that sense, kuntaks aren't ultimate. Why? They're just imaginary. Okay? How could they be ultimate? They're just imaginary. Okay. Are shenwangs ultimate?
No.
Are dependent things ultimate? We can go to a different reason here, okay? Are shenwangs ultimate? Are changing things ultimate? No. Why? Because when you perceive them, you don't perceive ultimate reality. Okay? When you are in the direct perception of emptiness, are you focusing, are you perceiving shenwangs, changing things? What do you think?
No.
I'll ask you again. In that 20 minutes that changes your whole being forever, the day that you become two of the three jewels, okay? The day that you become God according to Buddhism, you know? On that day, on that thing that you perceive for 20 minutes, is that a changing thing or not? Is it? No. Okay, why? What is it? What do you see? Emptiness. Emptiness. Okay? Is emptiness a changing thing or an unchanging thing? It's an unchanging thing. Prove it. Come on, it's just an absence of something. Okay? It's an absence of something. Is there a two-headed, purple, 30-foot elephant in this room at this moment?
No.
You say no, okay? I mean, nobody looked under the chairs or anything, okay? Yeah. Yeah, you say no. You know? Why? Well, first of all, they don't exist at all. They couldn't be in any room anyway. I'm talking about one that purely doesn't exist, okay? Let's say in theory that such a thing doesn't exist. Two-headed, 40-foot, purple elephant rampaging through this room, smashing people, breaking chairs, everything. Does it exist? No. Is this room empty of such an elephant? Yes. That's one kind of emptiness in that room. Is that the kind of emptiness that when you perceive it, it changes your reality forever? No. Okay. So it's not really the ultimate emptiness. But is it a form of emptiness in this room? Does this room display or exhibit that kind of emptiness?
Yes.
Yes. Does it change?
No.
Does this room at a certain hour become less empty of a 30-foot, two-headed purple elephant? No, it's either purely empty or not, okay? You gotta get used to that. Emptiness is the pure absence of something, 100% absent. It's not like there's half of a purple elephant here, or maybe there could be one tomorrow, or there's a doubt about it or something. It's just purely empty of that. Self-existence is the same thing. Most people don't ever understand that when we speak about emptiness, we're speaking about something that could never exist anyway. It's exactly the same ontological level as a two-headed 30-foot purple elephant. For something in this room to be self-existent would be exactly the same as anything in this room being a two-headed purple 30-foot rampaging elephant. They are equally impossible. There's no such thing. There never was any such thing. There never will be any such thing. And this room is empty of self-existence. Two, same thing. Does it ever get more or less empty of self-existence? No. A self-existence can't exist, okay? This room has always been 100% empty of self-existence. This room will always be 100% empty of self-existence. Self-existence is an unchanging absence of something. Okay? Unchanging absence of something. That's ultimate reality. Okay? That is the ultimate. Now, question. Can shenwangs be ultimate reality? Can dependent things which grow from their causes and conditions, the ultimate reality? No. Why? They change. Okay? Once something has come from a cause, it changes. Why? The energy of the cause fluctuates. Therefore, the thing it's pushing out has to fluctuate. It's like a fountain. You know, if the water pressure changes, it has to get down. If the water pressure increases, it has to go up. Okay? If the cause is strong, the result is strong. If the cause weakens, the result weakens. Results are at the mercy of their causes. Okay? And causes always wear out. That's why you're having a bad time in your life. Whatever wimpy good karma you ever had is wearing out as we speak. Okay? And you're getting older. Okay? Really? Okay? It's the nature of good, dirty, what we call dirty good karma. Any good thing in your life is at the mercy of a cause called dirty good karma. And dirty good karma always wears out. Don't feel bad about your last breakup. It had to break up. Okay? It was created by dirty good karma. Okay? And same as everything good thing in your life. The idea is to get, is to change things to pure good karma. It's a big difference. Okay? Yeah?
My question kind of goes back to the last thing that
yeah. Yeah, the facts don't change. Yeah, yeah. Right. Facts, you have to get used to this. It's a big distinction and you have to think about it and you have to cook it, okay? Facts can go in and out of existence as the objects to which they refer go in and out of existence. The fact that this pen is empty will one day go out of existence. When? When the pen itself is destroyed. But does that fact ever change? No. As long as it's present, its value never varies. How's that? Okay. It can go out of existence, but it can't like get less the last 30 seconds. You know, that somehow it's less empty 30 as it's going out of existence. Okay? As long as it's here in any shape and form or any part of it is still here, it is still 100% empty. Okay? But you gotta get used to that. Okay, yeah.
Is it safe to say that a mind-only school way of thought would say that if the tree fell in the forest when nobody was there, it would still make a sound, and the middle way school would say that it didn't make a sound?
You could say something like that. She said, you know, tree in the forest thing. Mind-only school would probably say something like, it's there because it's existing from its own side. The middle way school might say, it's not there because no one's perceiving it. Okay, I would say that's probably fair, although you'd have to be careful, you know, but generally speaking, you say that. By the way, I'll tell you, and it's very important, it's on your homework, okay? Now that she brought it up, okay, what does it mean to exist really in the mind-only school? Okay. What is it? By the way, when I say really, I mean by definition. Okay. In the mind-only school, we're going to talk about by definition. Okay. Some things exist by definition, other things don't. What does it mean to exist by definition? Okay. We have to talk about it. Generally, if a thing has some unique way of being from its own side, in the mind-only school, we say it exists by definition. Pens exist by definition. Okay, why? It has some nature coming from its own side. It has a unique way of being coming from its own side. Okay, and that's how you feel, right? We are touching on a sore point. Okay, the reason you haven't seen emptiness directly yet, if you haven't, is because you really believe this. You are a mind-only school person. I accuse you of being a mind-only school person. Okay? Every time the boss yells at you, you swear it's coming from him. Okay? From his you can't stand to think that it's you. You cannot accept it. You go on denying it and you keep suffering because of that. If you have not seen emptiness directly in this lifetime or gotten very close, I accuse you of being a mind-only school. My boss exists by definition. Why? Because when he gets mad, that's coming from its own unique nature that's coming from him, not from me. There is something out there. I insist that there's something out there. Okay? You're mind-only school. You're stuck in the mind-only school. That's why we study the mind-only school, so you can get sensitive to that fact. You gotta go to work tomorrow and see if you're mind-only school or not. Okay? No, and how do you tell? It's when you get upset. You can only have a mental affliction if you misunderstand reality. That's the way mental afflictions work. You cannot get upset unless you misunderstand reality. You cannot get upset at an object in your life unless you are stuck in the mind-only school about that thing. Okay? Yes, it has its own unique way of being from its own side. It's not me. Okay? There is something out there, okay, coming from its side, and I'm mad at it, and I wish they would fix themselves. You know, okay? You can't have a mental affliction unless you misunderstand reality. Mental afflictions and an understanding of emptiness cannot coexist in one human mind at one moment. Impossible. That's why the antidote for mental afflictions is seeing emptiness, is understanding an object. You cannot be unhappy towards an object if you understand its emptiness. Period. It's cool. The key to happiness, you know. If you're not stuck in the mind-only school, you cannot be unhappy about an object. How's that? Or conversely, if you are unhappy or upset at something, you're stuck in the mind-only school way of thinking about it. Okay? Yeah. Sykes. He says, has there ever been a mind-only school Arya? The answer is no. Has not. Has not. Okay? And it's a big debate in the monastery. So what about Arya Sangha? He was mind-only school. He taught the mind-only school. So did Lord Buddha. Okay? You see what I mean? Okay. Oh, so if somebody comes up to you and says, what does it mean in the mind-only school for something to exist by definition? What are you going to say? That thing exists out there from its own side with its own unique way of being. Okay? That's what it means in the mind-only school, to exist by definition. Okay? Yes? Sorry?
Is the mind-only school, as opposed to all the other schools that believe that objects have existence from their own side, say that it exists from
their
own side only by definition?
Yeah. Basically. But it's very delicate. No, it's very delicate. It's very delicate. We'll go into it. We'll talk about it. Okay, say Yongdup. Yongdup.
Yongdup.
Yongdup is the word for the lack of any ultimate nature. And it is the code word in the mind-only school for emptiness itself. Okay? And this is the third thing that the Buddha was referring to when he said nothing had any nature of its own. What's that? Yongdup. What's Yongdup? Emptiness. Okay? Emptiness itself. Yeah, mind-only school, Yongdrup is a code word for emptiness, okay? What does Yong mean? Yong means everything, totality. Drup means is. What's totally is mean? Totally is means the minute an object exists, it is 100% empty. So in the mind-only school, we call emptiness totality, okay? You can call Yongdrup, you can translate it as totality. Totality. Don't forget it's a code word for emptiness. It's the mind-only school's word for emptiness. Okay. What does Yongdrup mean literally? Oh, everything exists. What does that mean? As soon as an object exists, it's 100% empty. Okay? Every object. Okay? As soon as it comes into being, it is permeated by emptiness. Is it emptiness? No. This is a changing thing. It can't be emptiness. We already talked about that. Okay? All right? Yeah? He asked, before a thing came into being, does it have its emptiness? No. You have to be existing to have your own emptiness. Before you come into being, you don't have emptiness. After you stop being, you don't have emptiness. Okay? Emptiness absolutely has its own emptiness. Yeah. In mind only. Yeah. Okay. So, Yongdrup is going to be our code word for emptiness. So, we're going to take a break, but just before that, I'm going to ask you three questions, okay? Lord Buddha, in the second turning of the wheel, said nothing has any nature of its own. Was he being literal?
Yes.
She's the only one who answered correctly. What did you say?
For whom?
Okay, I'll ask it again. Lord Buddha got up in the second turning of the wheel and said nothing has any nature of its own. Did he mean it? Not for the mind-only school. Okay. Well, what did he mean? Oh, don't you remember? He talked to that, the Bodhisattva asked him that. And he said, I wouldn't say nothing has any nature of its own. What I meant was, there are certain things like mental images, constructs of your mind, that don't have any definitive nature of their own. That's one thing I meant. I mean, they don't have any real reality from their own side. They're just kind of made up with your mind, okay? That's the first thing I meant. The second thing I meant was, there's these changing things all around you, okay? And when I said they don't have any nature, I meant they don't have any nature just happening from their own side. They're happening because of some bad karma you did. Get it? Okay. And then the third thing I meant was, look, things don't have a nature of being ultimate. Changing things aren't ultimate because they are not what you perceive when you perceive emptiness directly. Okay. Images, constructs aren't ultimate because you just make them up. And that is their emptiness. Okay. That is their emptiness. They are not ultimate. Okay. They are not ultimate. Those two things. Okay. Their lack of being ultimate is their emptiness. How's that? Okay? So that's how we derive emptiness in the mind-only school. We'll be going through it over and over again. Don't get nervous, okay? don't not come back after the cookies, okay? come back in about 5 or 10 minutes, okay? Say, Ranki.
Ranki.
Tiniki. Tupa. Ranki, Tiniki, Drupa. This means exists by definition. Okay? Ranki, Tiniki means by definition. Drupa means exists. Exists by definition. Now you got to put your thinking hat, okay? On. Which thinking hat? Okay, mind only. Somebody made an interesting point. Axel made an interesting point. Somebody asked me, were there any mind only ayahs? I said, no, right? According to whom? According to middle way school. According to the mind only school, how many middle way ayahs are there?
None.
Okay. Why? All those middle way guys, they're nihilists. They think nothing exists. They say nothing exists. They're crazy. Okay. Alright? You gotta think like that. Alright? Okay, mind only school. Rangi Tseniki Drupa. Exists by definition. What do they mean? Does this pen exist by definition according to mind only school? Yes. Okay. Why? It has some existence from its own side. Okay? If it didn't, then I could hold this up and it would be a pen. I mean, if things were just random, crazy, nothing has any nature of its own, then why don't you see a pen when I hold this up? You see what I mean? Things must have some nature of existing from their own side through some unique way of being of their own, okay? They exist through some unique way of being from their own side, on their own. Okay? They must have something, okay? That's what it means in this school to exist from your own side. I'm sorry, to exist by definition. Stated negatively, it is not simply a made up with your mind, okay? It is not simply something you made up with your mind. It has its own unique way of being from its own side. Okay? Now, of those three categories of stuff in the mind-only school, what? Say, kunda?
Kunda.
This is going to become a mind-only mantra. Okay? Kunda?
Kunda.
Shenwang?
Shenwang.
Yongdu?
Yongdu.
Kunda?
Kunda.
Shenwang?
Shenwang.
Yongdu.
Yongdu.
Kunda meaning constructs, right? Mental constructs. Shenwang meaning dependent things, things that come from grow from causes and conditions. Yongdu meaning emptiness itself. Okay. Now, question for you guys. If existing by definition in this school means it comes from its own side, through its own unique way of its own being, of its own, and it's not simply made up with your mind, how many of those three things exist by definition? Do kundaks exist by definition according to the mind-only school? No. Why? They're just made up with your mind. They don't come from their own side. Dashi, if dashi came from its own side, then the minute that blob came out of the mom's tummy, they'd say, oh, dashi. Okay? He would suggest dashi from his own side, the way that the blob does. Okay? That proves, okay? That proves that they're not. Okay? Can't just grow on its own. Okay? In the air like that. Okay? You can imagine it, but it can't really do it, right? Okay? How about Shenwang? How about things that come... How about this pen? Thing that came from its own causes and conditions. Does it exist by definition? In the mind-only school? Yeah, why? Negatively stated, it is not just a imaginative thing. Okay? It's not just something you made up in your mind. Okay? Positively stated, it is something that's coming from its own side, through its own unique way of being. It has its own way of being. Out there, on its own. Okay? It does have. Okay? That's what it means. Now how about emptiness itself? Is it something you just make up with your mind? In this school? No. Okay? Every object has it. Especially Shenwangs have it. Okay? Every object has it. It's something that also has its own unique way of being from its own side. Emptiness. Okay? So it does exist by definition. So in this school, how many of those three groups exist by definition? Number two and number three. Number one doesn't because it's just something you make up in your mind. Okay? Now contrast that. What they say in high school? Compare and contrast, right? Compare and contrast. Compare and contrast that to the... Now go to the middle way school. Go back to those other classes we had. Okay? Does this pen exist by definition? No. And I'll tell you why. If you strip away the idea of the pen, which is forced on you by your karma, can you find a pen?
No.
No. When a dog comes in here without their karma forcing them to see it as a pen, do they see a pen? They cannot. Do not. They see a stick, something to chew on. Okay? Strip away the name, meaning, strip away the thought of it in a certain way forced on you by your past karma, you cannot find the pen. That's proof that it does not exist by definition. Okay? Now you've got to be able to flirt between the two schools. You've got to be able to flow between the two schools. Okay? Ready? Here we go. Mind-only school. Does it exist by definition, this pen, Geraldo?
Yeah,
why? Because I'm not just making it up in my mind, and it has its own unique way of being from its own side. Okay? Nigel, middle-way school. Does it exist by definition?
No.
No, why? Come on, wimpy. No, because if I strip away my idea of it as a pen, which is forced on me by my past karma, if I strip away, if I try to look at it as if I'm a dog or an Eskimo who never saw a pen before, I have no karma to see it as a pen. Strip away that. Strip away the name and thought of it as a pen. Is there a pen there? Can you find a pen there? No. Okay? That's proof in the middle way school that it does not exist by definition. How many things in the middle way school exist by definition? Nada. Nothing. Okay? If you don't have the karma to see something a certain way, if you don't have the projection or the imputation caused by your own karma to see it a certain way, will you ever see it that way? No. Will it ever exist that way? No. Okay? What's it got to do with my life? It's a projection to see myself getting old. It's a projection to see myself dying. You can change it. If it wasn't a projection, you're stuck. You might as well just go out and drink tonight. You know? Because it is a projection, there's hope. Okay? It's extremely important that it's a projection. Okay? It's our ticket out. Okay? So if it's a projection, what am I supposed to do? Collect some good karma, please. Okay? That's all. That's all. Okay? So, Vichari, does it exist by definition in the mind-only school? Huh? Yes. Why? Because it's not just something I'm making up my mind. It exists from its own side through its own unique way of being. Okay? Sillard. Middle way school, does it exist by definition?
No.
No. Why? Because if I...
Because first you're projecting, you're describing a quality...
Say it negative way. If I strip away...
The concept of pen, it's not a pen.
Yeah. My projection caused by my karma of it as a pen. If I look for the pen without the imputation pen, I'll never find a pen. There's no such thing. That's evidence that it doesn't exist by definition. You've got to get it straight. It's on your homework. One more time. Okay. That's the only reason you have to get it straight. Okay. My name is Cole. Doesn't exist by definition. Yes. Why? It's not just a figment of my imagination, like Kuntaks are. Okay? It exists from its own side through its own unique way of being. Okay? Middle way school. Does it exist by definition? No. Why? Because if I don't think of it as a pen, I can't find a pen. Okay? What's making me think of it as a pen? My past karma. Okay? It's forcing me to see it as a pen. If I didn't have that projection or imputation, I could never find a pen. If you go looking for a pen without the karma to make you see it as a pen, you'll never find a pen. That's all. Okay? Get used to it. You gotta be able to swing between those two schools. Okay? And I accuse you in your real life of thinking of all of these things in a mind-only way. Oh, it exists out there on its own. It's not just my karma making this traffic jam. You know? It's gotta be all those other stupid drivers. You know? Okay? It's not my mind making me see this. I don't have to be patient with them. You know? Yeah? Yeah, yeah. She said, so essentially it's the middle way school saying everything is a karmic construct. You could say in one way, yeah. Yeah. Excuse me? Yeah. Even emptiness. Yeah.
Trying to understand a little bit better this concept that something has a unique existence from its own side.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. He said, can you give us a little bit more of information about what it means to exist through its own unique way of being from its own side? When we asked the Lama in the monastery to teach us that, he gave us what he called a unique oral instruction. He said, there is a level of instruction about what it means to exist through its own unique way of being from its own side. And he described it primarily in two senses, okay? And it's a very good question. One, if it comes from its own causes and conditions, it's already coming from its own side to its own unique way of being. Okay? That's the easy part. So what you say functionality is pretty close to that. You know, once it's got its own causes and conditions, once it's arising from its own causes and conditions, it must have, according to the mind-only school, some way of being on its own, out there. Okay? And then secondly, what they would call some kind of intrinsic identity. Those are the two flavors of what it means to exist from its own side through its own unique way of being. Those two flavors. What? A, it's coming out, it's out there because it's caused by its own things out there. Okay? There are things out there that are making the pen happen, and the pen is out there happening on its own. It must be independent of me because it's got its own causes cooking it up out there. And then secondly, it's got a unique identity. It's got some penness. That's the flavor of what the mind-only school people think when they say that. Okay. Now, is it only changing things that we talk about as being existing by definition? No. Emptiness also exists by definition. So you'd have to apply only the unique identity-ness thing to that. Okay. Okay, we better move on or we won't finish. So we kind of said that the mind-only school has these three categories, right? What are they? Kuntak, Shenwang, Yongdu. Kuntak meaning constructs of the mind. Shenwang meaning anything that causes dependent things, things that come from other things, okay? And then Yongdu being emptiness, okay? Now there's a homework question here. Explain for each of these three attributes why it is that it can be described as the corresponding lack of a self-nature. Don't forget that kuntaks, or imaginary things, were described by Lord Buddha as not having any definitive nature, right? And then when he got to dependent things, he said, they don't have any nature of growing. Okay, it's in your notes, don't worry. Then when he got to the third thing, he said, they don't have any nature of being ultimate. Okay, so not having any nature of ultimate seems to hang with emptiness. Not having any nature of growing seems to hang with dependent things. Not having any definitive nature seems to hang with imaginary things. Now, why is that? How does this all come? Don't forget, okay? But if you think you're confused, you should have been in our class. Okay. Don't forget where we're coming from. Where are we coming from? The Buddha, in the second turning of the wheel, said what? Nothing has any nature of its own. Nothing has any nature of its own. And then the Bodhisattva said, what are you talking about? What did you mean? He says, oh, I didn't mean it literally. I meant three different things. Things don't have any definitive nature. Things don't have any nature of growing. And things don't have any nature of being ultimate. And we call those Kundak, Shenwang, and Yongdu. In my new school. It's called mine only school. And that's the real one, I believe. Okay? Alright? Okay? Don't forget where we're coming from. Okay? So here's how it goes. Why is it that constructs can be said not to have any definitive nature of their own? Remember the word definitive. Why is it that constructs don't have any definitive nature of their own? Well, it's because they don't exist by definition. What does that mean in this school? They don't exist from their own side through your own unique way of being. They are just made up with your mind. Okay? Got it? Who? I'll say it again. Constructs don't exist by definition in this school, in the mind-only school, because they are just something made up in your mind. They don't come from your own unique way of being. You know what? A sky flower? Does a 30-foot, two-headed purple elephant have some way of existing from its own side? No. They're not a common problem in this cafeteria. Okay? They're not. Okay? That's an indication that they don't exist from their own side. They're just made up. We just made it up in my mind. And you made one up too. Because you giggle. So you must have been thinking of one, right? Does it have some unique way of existing of its own, from its own side, especially its own causes and conditions? No. It's just a figment of the imagination. Okay? That's why when the Buddha said nothing has any nature of existing definitively, he was talking about kuntaks, okay? Constructs, mental constructs. Boy, I just lost like 5 students in the next class. Okay. Why did the Buddha say about this pen that it didn't have any nature of growing? Yeah, independently, without any causes and conditions. It doesn't have any nature like that. That's all I meant. I didn't mean everything was a figment of your mind. I didn't mean anything was a projection of your karma. I wouldn't say that. Would I say that? Okay. That's Lord Buddha, right? Okay, third one. Why can we say that this thing doesn't have any ultimate nature? Why does this pen not have any ultimate nature? Nature of being ultimate. You can go at it from a couple of angles. First of all, it could never be the object of the direct perception of
emptiness.
So it can't be ultimate reality. Easy. Okay? It can't be ultimate reality. Okay? That's easy. Alright? Does it have self-existence? Does it have self-existence? By the way, I didn't say definition. I said self-existence. In this school, does it have self-existence? I didn't say by definition. I said, does it have self-existence? Does it happen by itself? No. Okay? It's empty. It has its own emptiness. Alright? So still in this school, they talk about emptiness. And still in this school, they talk about not being self-existent. Okay? Still in this school, they say that. Okay. Next. On the subject of young groups, which means what? Totality or emptiness, okay? Say again? He's going to use some example to give you an idea of what totality means or emptiness, okay? By the way, why is it called totality? All it means is that anytime something comes into being, it is 100% empty. We'll call it totality. It has totality. It is 100% empty. It's totally empty. So a code word in the mind-only school for emptiness is totality. Okay? Now, question for you. In the sutra, where the Buddha teaches all this stuff, the Bodhisattva says, could you give us some examples? I mean, like, it's like 9 o'clock, I'm kind of tired, I worked hard today, and I'm not sure I'm going to remember half of what you said tonight, and it's getting a little confusing. Could you just give us a few simple examples about, you know, can you give me an example for Kuntak, and then give me an example for Shenlong, and then give me an example for Yongdu, okay? Give me an example for constructs. Give me an example for dependent things, and then give me an example for totality or total emptiness. Can you please give us an example? So Lord Buddha starts out with number three, okay? He starts out with number three, which is emptiness. So here's your example. It's on your homework. Thomas Olson thinks he's going to grade all these things too. Okay. It might be easier just to make a stamp with the right answer on it. Get some red ink or something. This is your last thing. Say Yongdu, Namkha, Dung, Da. Yongdu, Namkha, Dung, Da. You'd be glad to know we can stay here till 10:30. Okay. We get to have snacks and we get to stay later. We didn't ask about dogs, but we can find out. Okay. Okay, Yongdu, if you know, is the... We translate it as totality, but you know it means emptiness in this school. Okay, Yongdu means emptiness in the mind-only school. Emptiness is Namkha. Namkha means empty space. Okay? Empty space. Does it mean outer space? Black with white dots in it. No. Okay? Does it mean the space between my right hand and my left hand? No. Some scriptures say that it's wrong. Bukan namge lotan da. Something like that. That's a lower school idea. Space means the place in which things stand. Okay? Space is the absence of physical obstruction which allows things to stand where they are. Okay? You can... This pen is occupying space. Now it's not occupying that space anymore. Did the space change? No. It's always there. Whether it's occupado or not occupado, it's the same. Okay? Empty space is an example for an unchanging thing in Buddhism. It's one of the few unchanging things around you. Okay? Whether this planet is blown up or not, the space which it occupies will remain. Okay? Whether the planet moves on in its orbit or not, the place where it was will always be there, occupied or not occupied. It's place. Place itself. Okay? Namkha means empty space in that sense. And it's often misexplained or unexplained. Okay? Alright? Empty space. So what is Lord Buddha saying? Dung Da means, you want an example for Yongdu? Dung Da means just like Namkha. Dung Da means just like Namkha. You want an example for what's Yongdu? Emptiness. It's just like empty space. Okay. How do we define empty space? The absence of physical obstruction. Okay? Is this space being physically obstructed right now? No. Or else the pen couldn't stand there. The pen would have to jump to the side. It'd be pushed out to the side. There is empty space there. Occupied or not occupied, it's always there. It's allowing the pen to be there. Okay? It's the absence of physical constraints in that place. Okay? It never changes. It's occupied or not occupied, but it never becomes more or less empty space. Okay? Got it? Emptiness is just like that. Okay? And importantly, emptiness is the absence of something. Okay? It's like what? It's like the lack of a two-headed, 30-foot purple elephant in this room. It's a perfect example. Why? Doesn't exist. Couldn't exist. Never existed. Won't exist. Okay? Self-existent things are the same. The thing that causes all the suffering in your life, the thing that's dying, the thing that's making you die is an idea about, is a belief in something that never existed anyway. It's so crazy. You see? It's not just like something that does exist and you have to deny it. It's something that never existed, never will exist, never could exist, and because you think it exists, you're dying. Okay? That's emptiness. Okay? So space is a perfect example for it. Space is the absence of something. So you want a good example for Yongdup, says Lord Buddha? How about empty space? Okay? Simple absence of something. Okay? Yeah. Ah, she said something very sweet. What's the definition of emptiness according to the mind-only school? Okay. Let's put it a different way. What is emptiness empty of in the mind-only school? You see? What is emptiness empty of in the mind? What's the gakcha? What's the thing we deny when we speak of emptiness? When you say, there's no gakcha in this room, and that's what the emptiness of this room is, you're saying, there's no self-existent thing in this room. Well, what does it mean in the mind-only school to be self-existent? Well, let me first check in with you, students who've been to 14 courses. What's the gakcha according to the middle-way school? Self-existent. Wimpy, come on. Describe it. What would a self-existent pen look like if it existed? Which it doesn't. It would be independent of your projection. It would be a pen whether or not you were thinking about it as a pen. It would be a pen whether or not your karma was forcing you to see a pen. It would be a pen to a dog and a virus and a roach and everything else. Okay? Because it would be a pen independent of your karmic projections. Okay? It would exist out there on its own. That's the gakcha according to the middle way school. Mind-only school? It's more difficult. We won't do it tonight. Okay? It's too much to do at 9:30 at night. Okay? Very briefly, and this is not on your homework, and it is not part of the lesson for tonight. Okay? Very briefly, just to give you a bakchak, a taste for the future. Okay? It is the fact that it's not the case that this pen and your eye perceiving this pen have come from different karmas. You and the reality around you have come from one karma or a single karmic event in the past. That thing doesn't exist independently of your mind perceiving it, because they have both been produced by the same karma. One karma has produced Nigel's eyeball, and one karma, that same karma, has produced this pen. You are looking at your toes. Okay? You're actually looking at part of you. Okay, that's a difficult question. You know, we'll get into it. If any pen ever existed otherwise, that would be a self-existent thing. And that doesn't exist in this school. Now that you got to, they're very delicate. We'll get to it later, okay? We'll get to it later. So, it's still true in the mind-only school that emptiness is the absence of a non-existent self-existent thing. Got it? It's still true. It's just that a self-existent thing is described a little differently. Okay? But it's still true that emptiness is the general absence of a self-existent thing that never did exist, never could exist, and never will exist, and doesn't exist now. Okay? That's still true. Now, Jetsun Kapa says, therefore, at this point in the text, he says, therefore, anybody in Tibet who came up and said, I believe this sutra is being literal. I believe this sutra has to be taken on face value. Okay? When Lord Buddha said what? When Lord Buddha said that emptiness is like empty space. A good example or a good illustration of emptiness would be empty space. Why? Because it's the simple absence of something. It's the simple absence of something. Okay? Now suppose somebody in Tibet came up and said, Lord Buddha was being literal when he said that. Was he being literal, by the way, in the mind-only school? Yes. Emptiness is the absence of a non-existent, self-existent thing. Is that also true for the middle-way school? Yes. It doesn't matter what school you're in. Both middle-way school and mind-only school say that emptiness is the general absence of a self-existent thing that never could exist and never will exist. Now, what's a self-existent thing mean? is different between the two schools. But both schools agree that Lord Buddha was being literal when he said, it's just like empty space. It's just the absence of something that's not there. And that's what emptiness is. Everybody agrees that Lord Buddha was being literal. Now, could you then say in the same breath, if you're not crazy, that emptiness is this positive, self-standing object? Could you say that? Could you on one hand say Lord Buddha was being literal when he said emptiness is the simple lack or absence of something, and then on the other hand say, yeah, emptiness is this little ball thing, positive thing, stands out there on its own? No, you'd have to be crazy to say that. It's contradiction. Okay? And Jetsun Kapa says that in the text at this point. He says, you know, you'd have to be crazy to think Lord Buddha was being literal when he said it was like empty space, and then at the same time to say emptiness is like this white ball, you know, and it's this thing, you know, it's this sphere, you know, this positive, self-standing, white, spherical, light thing. You know, I saw it the other day. It was like green, you know, a little bit yellow or something like that. There were people in Tibet who said that. That school is called Jonamba. Okay, you should write it down. It's called Jonamba. Okay? Jonamba. I'll spell it roughly. It's interesting because this school is having a little comeback nowadays. I mean, some people say, oh yeah, that's right. Emptiness is this positive thing. Emptiness is a positive, self-standing thing. And some, not the Jonamba, but some other people say, oh yeah, and it's kind of white light or something like that. There is a description of emptiness as clear light, which has nothing to do with light. It's the absence of a self-existent thing. But then some schools get confused and start saying, oh, you know, you close your eyes real hard, maybe you squeeze on the eyeball, you see this white thing, you know, and that's emptiness. Or some kind of, oh yeah, I was in this deep thing and I saw this white light, you know. Forget it. Emptiness is an absence of something. Okay? These are, several Tibetan schools did say it. Jetsun Kapa, at this exact point in the text, is criticizing them. And then you still hear it nowadays. You know. It's totally wrong. Buddha said over and over again in all the schools, emptiness is a simple absence of something that couldn't exist anyway. And it's not some kind of white light and you know, you go find a nice girl and you know, you get deep into this thing and see this white light. You know, no. Okay? Not that. Okay? Totally wrong. Totally mistaken. Deadly mistaken. Why? If you do not figure out under emptiness in this lifetime, you will die. Definite. Guaranteed. Okay? Give somebody some weird explanation of emptiness, you're signing their death warrant. Okay? Literally. Okay? If you don't perceive emptiness in this lifetime, you have no chance of tantric enlightenment or any other kind of enlightenment. Period. You will die. People who are teaching that are killing people. It's bad. It's very wrong. And Jetsun Kapa is attacking it here. He says, who could believe that? Who would ever say that? You can read it in the reading. Okay? Here's your other example. And then you can go home. Sure. Say, Kunta.
Kunta.
Namke.
Namke.
Meto.
Meto.
Dang.
Dang.
Da. Kunta.
Kunta.
Namke.
Namke.
Meto.
Meto.
Dang.
Dang.
Da. By the way, don't, I again ask, don't get nervous. You know, this is very heavy stuff. This is the last course of the ACI series, 7 years, and it's the hardest one. But if you hang in there, you'll be all right, okay? Tonight you got the most information that you'll ever get. From then on, it's easier. Then when I say Kundak, you know what I'm talking about. Shenmong, you know what I'm talking about. But the first time you hear it, it takes a while to get used to it, okay? So don't get nervous. And don't disappear next class, okay? You paid a lot of money for the space and everything. Okay. Kundak means, you know, construct. Okay? Construct. By the way, the Bodhisattva has asked Lord Buddha, could you simplify things? Could you give us an example of each one? Could you give us a metaphor or an illustration? So he says, okay, I'll give you an example for Kundak, which means constructs, right? Do constructs refer to existing things or not? Huh? Which school? Ah, I like that. Mind only school. Some of them do, and some of them don't. Okay? Like you can imagine a flower growing in the middle of the air. That's a kunta, but it doesn't have any real existence. Okay? And you can also think of the person next to you as being Joe or Sally or something like that. You are using a construct when you think of them that way, and that does correspond to the person. There is a person named Robin, and I'm thinking of a person. I'm thinking of you as Robin. There's nothing about you that suggests Robin independently, but I can think of you as Robin, and that's okay. There is a woman named Robin. Okay? So the constructs can either refer to things which really do exist. These are things you make up in your mind, right? Or they can refer to things that don't really have an existence, okay? So, namka metto. Namka means space. You just had it meaning empty space. Here it means mid-air, okay? In this example, namke means in mid-air. Metto means flower. Flower, a flower, okay? Dungja means similar to or just like. Okay, you want an example for kuntaks? I'll give you an example for kuntaks. A flower that grows in midair. Okay. One more point, and then it might answer your question. A flower that grows in midair has two different characteristics. We're only talking about one of them, and we're not talking about the other one. What's the first characteristic of a flower that could grow in midair? It is an imaginary thing. That's what we're talking about here. Lord Buddha says, you want an example for a kuntak? Think about 30-foot, two-headed purple elephant. That's a kuntak. You see what I mean? He's using flower that grows in midair as an example of something that you can imagine. Something imaginary. Now, oftentimes in Buddhist scripture, namke metto, or flower that grows in midair, is used as an example for something that could not exist. And that's not the meaning here. It is not the meaning here. The point here is that kuntaks are imaginary things. Okay? Got it? So we're not talking about something that doesn't exist. That's not the main point here. We're talking about something which exists only as an imaginary object. And that's what kuntaks are. That's the example Lord Buddha gives you. If you don't remember what kuntaks are in the future, try to remember this flower growing in midair as being an imagined thing. Or you can imagine anything else. A positive balance on my credit card. You know? Like totally imaginary thing. Okay? No, seriously. It's the same thing. Just totally impossible thing that you just imagine. Okay? Like that. Alright? We still have one of the three to go. Which one was it?
Shenwang.
We don't have an example for Shenwang. We don't have yet an example for dependent things. Here we go. Changing things. Things that are caused. This is the last sentence tonight. And I'm being literal. Zhe Shenwang, Guma, Dang, Da. Shenwang, Guma, Dang, Da. Okay. Shenwang means Shenwang, okay? Those things which are at the mercy of other things. A code word for caused things. A code word for things with causes. 99.999% of the things around you. Okay. Changing things, cause things, impermanent things. Okay? All synonyms for Shenwang. Dependent things. I'm going to be calling them dependent things. They're at the mercy of other things, meaning their causes. Specifically, your own suffering is produced and maintained quite sweetly by your ignorance until it kills you. Okay. Guma means illusion or like a magic show. In modern terms, you can say a movie. Okay. I mean, it looks like it's real, but it's not. Right? A good movie. Especially when you're really into it, you know. It looks like they really are blowing up New York City with an asteroid or something. You know what I mean? I mean, you're like ducking, you know. That's an illusion. Okay. Probably if the Buddha was alive nowadays, he'd be talking about movies a lot, I think. Okay. Gyuma Dangja. Dangja means is similar to. You want an example for dependent things? They are like an illusion. They are faking you out. They are tricking you. In what sense? What school are we in? Mind-only school. They are tricking you in one sense. Remember that thing? Let me ask you something. If you never heard of the mind-only school, would you say that your eyeball and that pen are intimately connected? They were born from the same mother. They are both being produced by the same energy. You standing here and that pen being over here so that you can look at it. Your eye and your consciousness of your eye and this pen over here, are they intimately, totally so connected that you can call them one substance almost? No, especially in the mind-only school. You see what I mean? In the mind-only school, the fact that my eyeball is here to see this thing and the fact that there's a pen there to see are being created by the same thing. What? My past karma. Okay? I'm not just talking about a projection or something like that. Mind-only school is saying something very radical. And get used to it. Mind-only school. Big tenet. Big idea in the mind-only school. That pen over there and my eye are being created and sustained by the same energy. Something I did in the past. Okay? My eyeball and that pen are being created by the same power. One karmic seed. One and the same karmic seed. Is that obvious to you? Did you go around saying, I created all these pens around me? You know? Hey, you know what? The karma that's making my eyeball be here is also making that pen be here. Do you go around saying that? Was it obvious to you before you got here tonight? No. But it's true. And you've been faked out all this time. Therefore, dependent things are just like an illusion. It appears that the pens over there are caused by a plastic pen factory. And it appears that this eyeball over here are caused by my mommy and daddy. And whatever hamburgers I've been eating. Okay? Right? But it does not appear that thing over there and this thing over here are being created and sustained by the same karma. By one karmic energy. Okay? By something I did in the past. Something I did in the past is creating New York City and me to experience it. That's a lot of stuff for one karma. You see what I mean? Okay? You know, does it seem to be true? No. In this school, is it true? Yes. Therefore, there's an illusion. Okay? You never would have guessed it if Lord Buddha hadn't told you. Okay? It's an illusion to think anything else. Shenwangs, changing things, are lying to you all the time. They say, I am a pen out here, and I was not created by the same karma that created you. Okay? But the truth is that it was. And that's the meaning of illusion. Okay? In this school. In this school. That's the meaning of what it means when Lord Buddha compared changing things to an illusion. Okay? What he meant was, it doesn't look like they're coming from the same karma as you are, but they is. Okay? All right? He said, what about middle way school? About what? When they say illusion, they mean something totally different. They mean something totally different. Okay? The most important illusion in the middle way school is right after you see emptiness directly and you come out of it, you start seeing things as self-existent again and you know you're doing it and you know you're wrong. And then there's this discrepancy between what you see and what you know is true. And for years after that, you still see things that way, wrong, but you know you're wrong. So it's pretty weird. It's like a kind of schizophrenia. It's a kind of illusion after that. That's what the main meaning of illusion in the middle way school. Okay. Yeah?
If they say that the pen and yourself comes from the same karma...
Let's say not self, but let's say your consciousness of the pen. Okay.
It comes from the same substance, then how can they attribute... an intrinsic nature to the pen. You know, we were talking about the...
Yeah, yeah. They'd say it has an intrinsic nature which is created by your karma. Okay.
So even though yeah. the same substance,
yeah.
it would have a separate unique nature.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, it's not the meaning of mind only that everything is mind. Okay? That's not what mind only means. We'll get into the meaning of mind only later, but it's not what you think, and it's not what it seems to be. Okay? It's not at all. And basically, it just means that your mind and everything that it sees are being created by the same karmic seed. So in that sense, they are of one substance. But not to imply that they are the same material. Okay. Yeah.
But that would mean that in mind only there is just one karmic seed.
Well, when I say one karmic seed, it can be the same group of karmic seeds. You see, it could be a billion karmic seeds. But what it means is, when I say one karmic seed, I mean one karmic energy, whether it's composed of billions of seeds, separate seeds or not.
It just means that.
Yeah, no. They don't believe that you just did one thing in the past and you have to experience New York for 40 years. It's not like that. No, it's like, when I mean one karmic seed, I mean one and the same at any particular millisecond. Okay, they can keep changing. Yeah. Yeah, something like, yeah. Yeah, pen is a construct. In the same way as dashi. It was a blue and white, you know, stick, and then based on your past experiences, you start thinking of it as dashi. Pen. Huh? Yeah, don't think of the pen. The construct you should call pen. And get used to that. Car. Pen. Nancy. Yeah. Yeah. The idea of Tashi. Technically, it's the fact that Tashi is named Tashi. How's that? Technically, it's the fact that the pen is called the pen. Oh, the Shenwa?
Yeah, why isn't that a construct?
Because it's not just made up of your own mind, and it comes from its own side through its own unique way of being, and it has its own causes and conditions. And whether or not you called it pen, it would be a pen from its own side. In the mind-only school. Yeah. Okay. Last question.
Can there be a mental construct without a name?
She said, could there be a mental construct without a name? I think technically, yes, if it were a thought. You see, they call Mingde Shak. Mingde means verbalization and or thinking of something in a certain way. How's that? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a thing called a dachi and a dunchi. Dachi means the verbalization image. You know, you hear the word Robin. And then dunchi is to actually conceptualize a person as a certain shape and color and like that. So there, yeah, nominalization occurs in both a verbal sense and in a mental or an imaged sense. And they both apply here. But I believe you could have one without the other. They call Dajangi Kibu, if you want to know technically, you know, a person who knows the name of the thing. And you can be a person who's not a Dajangi Kibu and still conceptualize a thing. Because you're making a mental conceptualization of it without, independent of a verbal conceptualization. Okay? I think they would say that in this school. Okay. Hang in there, okay? This is tough. And it's the key to understand the middle way nicely. You already know middle way better. Because you're starting to learn mind only, right? And the idea is to get a little bit confused so that in the end you can distinguish more carefully between what the middle way thinks and what the mind only thinks, and then get your own idea of emptiness much, much clearer. And His Holiness the Dalai Lama said, on Sunday, you have to study, study, study. You know? And he said, forget that jogam. Forget that one single point in shamatha meditation. You have to do analytical meditation. He didn't say 15 minutes ago. On emptiness and on what you think emptiness means, and you must rip it apart and think of it over and over and over and over again. He said it for 15 minutes. He went on about how you have to study, at the beginning. And then later you can take that study and go to the bank with it and perceive emptiness directly in a state of deep meditation, but you must have the study first. You are getting a very, very sweet distinction between the slightly wrong ideas about what emptiness means and the real ideas about what emptiness means. By the time you get done with this, your idea of what it means to be a projection will be totally clear because you understood what's not quite that. Okay? And that's the whole idea of doing this study. Next week we'll do the four other... Remember he said things don't have any nature of their own. They don't start. They don't stop. They are peace. They are nirvana. So we're going to get to the other four. We finished the first one. Okay? All right. We'll do some prayers. Okay?
You have been listening to What the Buddha Really Meant with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute. The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-275-7752.